The condensation on the stainless steel refrigerator door forms a single heavy droplet. It tracks a slow, jagged path through the thin layer of grease and dust, dragging a clear line down to the handle. The light from the overhead recessed bulb reflects in the bead of water, a tiny, distorted white dot. The air in the kitchen is exactly 68 degrees. It carries the faint chemical scent of lemon-scented floor wax and the metallic tang of the copper pipes beneath the sink. The clock on the wall does not tick. It hums, a low-frequency vibration that matches the steady drone of the refrigerator's compressor. On the granite countertop, a set of brass keys sits next to a bowl of green apples. The keys are silver, freshly cut, with sharp, jagged teeth that have not yet been smoothed by the friction of a pocket or a palm. It started with the drip. It was a rhythmic, insistent sound that bypassed the ears and settled directly into the base of the skull. Each drop hit the plastic basin of the guest bathroom sink with the force of a gavel. I told Marcus about it on his second night, not as a complaint, but as an apology. I'm a good host. I pride ourselves on the superhost badge that sits next to my profile picture, a photo of me laughing in a sun-drenched garden, looking like the kind of woman who never has a plumbing crisis. I told him I'd have a professional out by Monday. Marcus didn't look like the kind of man who waited for Mondays. He has the sort of posture that suggests he's constantly measuring the load-bearing capacity of the floor beneath him. He smiled, and it wasn't the practiced transactional smile of a short-term renter. It was the smile of a man who had noticed a loose thread on my sweater and was resisting the urge to reach out and trim it for me. He told me it was no trouble. He told me he liked to keep his hands busy. By Saturday morning, the drip was gone. He hadn't just replaced the washer. He had polished the chrome faucet until I could see the individual pores on my nose in the reflection. He'd also tightened the hinges on the vanity door. It didn't creak anymore. It didn't do anything. It moved with a silent, heavy precision that felt foreign in a house built in 1924. I thanked him, of course. I felt a flush of genuine relief. It's hard being a woman alone in a house this size, constantly listening for the sound of something wood rotting or wire fraying. Having him there felt less like hosting a stranger and more like having a silent partner in the upkeep of my own life. The strike plate on the front door is misaligned, he mentioned over coffee on Sunday. He'd bought the coffee. It was a dark, expensive roast that made my usual brand smell like burnt dirt. It's why you have to pull the handle upward when you lock it. It's a security risk, Sarah. A shim and a longer screw would fix the leverage. I laughed and told him I'd lived with that quirk for 5 years. I told him it was part of the house's charm, like the way the third stair always announced your arrival. He didn't laugh back. He just looked at the door with a squint of professional disapproval, as if the door were a patient with a treatable but neglected infection. It's about the integrity of the perimeter, he said softly. You shouldn't have to fight your own home to feel safe. That was the hook, to feel safe. He said it with such a lack of irony that I felt a sudden sharp pang of shame for my own sloppiness. I'd been living in a state of good enough, and Marcus was offering me perfect. Why would I say no to perfect? By Tuesday, the front door closed with a muted, expensive thud. No more lifting, no more jiggling. He'd also replaced the weather stripping. The draft that usually haunted the hallway was gone, replaced by a vacuum-sealed stillness. I noticed he started leaving his room more often. He wasn't overstepping, he was improving. He fixed the loose floorboard in the pantry. He recaulked the tub. He reorganized the spice rack by volatile oil content. Each time I walked into a room, I found a small tangible improvement. And with each improvement, a tiny piece of my own agency seemed to dissolve. I'd go to reach for the cumin, and my hand would hesitate, searching for its new logical home. I'd go to close a window, only to find he'd lubricated the track so thoroughly that the sash slid down with a ghostly ease that startled me. You're making me look bad, Marcus, I joked on Wednesday evening. We were in the kitchen. He was peeling an orange, the zest spraying a fine citrus mist into the air. He used a small serrated knife he'd brought with him. My knives, he'd noted, were dangerously dull. I'm just a guest who appreciates a well-maintained environment, he said. He handed me a slice of the orange. It was perfectly segmented. No pith, no seeds. You have such a beautiful foundation here. It just needs someone to pay attention to the details. You're so busy, Sarah. I can see the toll the house takes on you. He was right. I was tired. My freelance editing work was piling up, and the constant mental inventory of what's breaking next was a weight I hadn't realized I was carrying until he started lifting the corners of it. It felt good to be looked after. It felt like a luxury. On Thursday, the smart system arrived. I came home from the grocery store to find a box of high-end cameras and a sleek matte black hub on the dining table. Marcus was already on a ladder in the foyer. The old deadbolt was a grade 3, he explained, his voice echoing from the ceiling. Essentially a toy. A child with a heavy screwdriver could have been inside in under 30 seconds. I took the liberty of ordering a biometric system. It synced to an encrypted cloud. No more physical keys to lose. No more quirks. I stood in the hallway, holding two heavy bags of groceries. The handles were cutting into my fingers, leaving deep red welts. Marcus, that's a lot. Those systems are expensive. You didn't have to do that. Think of it as a gift, he said, stepping down from the ladder. He took the bags from my hands. He didn't ask. He just relieved me of the burden. I have a friend in the industry. It cost me next to nothing. And frankly, I'll sleep better knowing the person hosting me is actually secure. Wouldn't you? I looked at the empty hole in my front door where the old tarnished brass lock used to be. It looked like a wound, but when he installed the new one, a heavy, silent piece of machinery that glowed with a soft blue light, it felt like progress. He took my thumb and pressed it against the glass sensor. The lock engaged with a sound like a bolt-action rifle. Click, sure. There, he whispered. Now the house knows you. Friday was the day the atmosphere shifted. I woke up and realized I hadn't heard the coffee maker. Usually, the smell of that expensive roast drifted under my door by 7 a.m. I walked into the kitchen and found the counters bare. The bowl of apples was gone. The toaster was gone. Marcus was sitting at the kitchen table with a laptop. He wasn't wearing his usual handyman flannel. He was wearing a crisp white dress shirt, buttoned to the throat. Where's the everything? I asked, my voice sounding thin in the oversized room. Clutter creates cognitive friction, Sarah, he said without looking up. I put the small appliances in the lower cabinets. It creates a cleaner line of sight. It's better for your focus. I moved toward the cabinet to get a mug. As I passed the sink, I noticed a small black dome mounted in the corner of the ceiling. A camera. Is that in the kitchen? Total perimeter awareness, he said. The app tracks movement patterns. It can even alert emergency services if it detects a fall or unusual inactivity. It's for your protection. I reached for the cabinet handle, but my hand stopped. I felt a sudden irrational spike of heat in my chest. Marcus, I think maybe we've gone a bit far. This is still my house. I like my toaster on the counter. I like my cognitive friction. He finally looked up. His eyes were the color of slate, cool and unblinking. I understand change is difficult, but you have to admit, the anxiety you used to feel, the worrying about the locks, the leaks, the intruders, it's gone, isn't it? I wasn't that anxious, I lied. You were vibrating with it, he said softly. He stood up and walked toward me. He didn't stop until he was well within my personal space. I could smell the lemon wax on his skin. You were drowning in a house that was falling apart around you. I'm just providing the structure you were too tired to build for yourself. He reached past me and opened the cabinet. He pulled out a mug and set it on the counter. He didn't hand it to me. He placed it. I've updated the access codes for the weekend, he said. I noticed you had some guests scheduled for the garden suite. I canceled them. The security risk of rotating strangers is too high while we're still calibrating the sensors. You canceled my bookings? I felt the floor tilt. That was my mortgage payment. That was my grocery money. Marcus, you can't do that. You're a guest. You're an Airbnb guest. I was a guest, he corrected gently. Now, I'm the person making sure you don't lose everything. If you checked your email, you'd see I've already transferred the equivalent of 3 months' rent to your account. Consider it a long-term lease. It's better this way. No strangers, no risks, just maintenance. I backed away from him, my heart hammering against my ribs like a trapped bird. I needed to get out. I needed to walk down the street, find a cafe, and think. I needed to call someone. I turned toward the front door. I pressed my thumb to the sensor. The blue light turned red. A low electronic buzz vibrated through the metal. I tried again, pressing harder. Blast. It's in lockdown mode, Marcus said from the kitchen. I didn't hear him move, but he was suddenly right behind me. I noticed some suspicious activity on the street-facing camera. A white van has circled the block twice. Until I can verify the threat, the perimeter is sealed. It's for the best, Sarah. You know how dangerous the world is getting. Open the door, Marcus. I can't do that. Not until it's safe. It's my house. Open the door. I grabbed the handle and pulled. But it was like pulling on a mountain. The door was part of the wall now. Marcus reached out and placed a hand on the wall next to my head. He wasn't touching me, but I could feel the heat radiating from his palm. You're getting emotional. That leads to poor decision-making. Why don't you go upstairs and lie down? I've already adjusted the climate control in your bedroom to 67 degrees. It's the optimal temperature for REM sleep. I looked at him, and for a second, I saw the exit mirage. I saw myself screaming, breaking a window, running to the neighbors. I saw the police arriving. And then I saw Marcus calm and rational, showing them the receipts for the repairs, the proof of the bank transfer, the superhost who had clearly had a mental breakdown and was being cared for by her devoted long-term tenant. I saw the security cameras that had recorded me being erratic while he remained the picture of domestic stability. The cost of leaving was the house itself. If I fought him, I'd be the one hauled away from the perfect environment he'd created. I looked down at the silver keys on the counter. They weren't for me. They were for the cabinets he hadn't locked yet. I am tired, I whispered. My voice felt like it belonged to someone else. Someone smaller. Someone who didn't mind the cold. I know you are, he said. He reached out and tucked a loose strand of hair behind my ear. His fingers were cool. That's why I'm here. To take the variables out of your life. Go on, sleep. I'll handle the rest. I walked toward the stairs. Each step was silent. The third stair didn't creak. He'd fixed that too. I reached the landing and looked back down. Marcus was already back at the kitchen table, his silhouette framed by the harsh, perfect light of the LED strips he'd installed under the cabinets. He looked like he belonged there. He looked like the foundation. I went into my bedroom. The air was crisp, exactly 67 degrees. The heavy blackout curtains he'd hung were drawn tight, erasing the world outside. I lay down on the bed. The sheets were tight, tucked with military precision. I reached for the bedside lamp, but it wasn't there. In its place was a small, touch-sensitive panel. I tapped it. The room plunged into total, absolute darkness. In the silence, I listened. I listened for the drip of the sink. I listened for the draft under the door. I listened for the sound of a house breathing, aging, breaking. There was nothing, just the steady rhythmic hum of the ventilation system, circulating the filtered air, keeping me safe in the dark. I closed my eyes and waited for the house to tell me when it was time to wake up.